All right. Hi, everybody. I am here in La Vita, where they had a snowstorm. Gosh, I lose track of time. I think it was primarily Sunday. And there's snow everywhere here. I guess there's snow in Pueblo, too. Come to think of it, there is. For some reason, I don't notice as much there. I guess because here, it looks like it belongs, right, with the mountains and everything. It looks so beautiful. But we had actually just about the same amount of snow in Pueblo. There, I totally ignore it. Doesn't matter to me at all. I come here and I go, oh, my gosh, the snow is so beautiful. I heard Don announcing the upcoming retreat, and the pricing for the retreats in 2020 is a little different than the pricing in 2019. And I want to share why. It looks like if you lodge at the retreat house, you're getting a bargain because you're only paying $200. And if you lodge elsewhere, you're paying, I think it's $245. Believe it or not, it's the same. You're paying the same thing. The difference is dinner, the cost of dinner, is already figured into the lodging amount, right? So if you're not lodging at the retreat house, we need to add that cost of dinner to your retreat fee. Everybody's paying the same thing for dinner. It's $15 per dinner. So really, there's no difference. It's just that those lodging are already paying it. We're not going to make them pay it twice. And those not lodging aren't paying it, so they have to pay it because they're going to eat the same meals. So there's no difference in price, even though it looks like it. Things aren't always as they appear. Have you guys heard that before? Yeah. I also noticed that God is at Ann's house today. Do you guys see God? Oh, Ann, you got to lean back. We can't see God. You just covered God up. There it is, up above Ann's head. Do you see it shining in? Coming in through the roof, it looks like. You must have a skylight there. Yeah. There's a streak of light coming in. Yeah. I was noticing when you were teaching that it looked like God was behind you while you were teaching. I had a song selected, and then Ann talked about how we're not going to be here the next couple of weeks. I'm like, oh, that's right. A week from today is Christmas. Can you guys believe that? So I decided to play a Christmas song instead. Let me see if I can show you guys outside, though. Let's see. It's probably too bright. You can tell it's really wide out there, but you can't really see the snow. Nah, you can't see what it looks like. It's really beautiful. But it just won't show up in the camera. So let me just go to the Christmas song.
Would someday walk on water. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? The child that you've delivered will soon deliver you. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would give sight to a blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would calm the storm with his hands? Did you know that your baby boy has kiss the face of God? Mary, did you know? The blind will see, the deaf will hear, the dead will live again, the lame will leap, the dumb will speak, the praises.
Not bad, huh? She makes you just stop and listen. That's what she makes you do. Let's see. Dawn has asked for that link. She said share it so she can add it to her list. But I'm going to go ahead and just share it for everyone in case anybody else wants it too. And I'll tell you what that made me almost want to do. It made me want to not even teach, just sit and listen to great music for an hour. That's how good she was. Hopefully that works for y'all. All right. But I will teach because that's what we're here for. Now listen to music later. So we're here for the Tao Te Ching, enlightened leadership. And we're going to be looking at verse 39. So I'm going to start with the Tao Te Ching by Derek Lynn. This is the translation by Derek Lynn. Those that attained oneness since ancient times, colon. So this is a list of those who have attained oneness since ancient times. The sky attained oneness and thus clarity. The earth attained oneness and thus tranquility. The gods attained oneness and thus divinity. The valley attained oneness and thus abundance. The myriad things attained oneness and thus life. The rulers attained oneness and became the standard for the world. These all emerged from oneness. The sky, lacking clarity, would break apart. The earth, lacking tranquility, would erupt. The gods, lacking divinity, would vanish. The valley, lacking abundance, would wither. Myriad things, lacking life, would be extinct. The rulers, lacking standard, would be toppled. Therefore, the honored uses the lowly as basis. The higher uses the lower as foundation. Thus, the rulers call themselves alone, bereft, and unworthy. Is this not using the lowly as basis? Is it not so? Therefore, the ultimate honor is no honor. Do not wish to be shiny like jade. Be dull like rocks. I'm going to reach for Dr. Wayne Dyer next. He's sitting here smiling at me. He says, these things from ancient times arise from one. The sky is whole and clear. The earth is whole and firm. The spirit is whole and full. The 10,000 things are whole, and the country is upright. All these are in virtue of wholeness. When man interferes with the Tao, the sky becomes filthy, the earth becomes depleted, the equilibrium crumbles, creatures become extinct. Therefore, nobility is rooted in humility. Loftiness is based on lowliness. This is why noble people prefer to themselves as alone. This is why noble people refer to themselves as alone, lacking, and unworthy. The pieces of a chariot are useless unless they work in accordance with the whole. A man's life brings nothing unless he lives in accordance with the whole universe. Playing one's part in accordance with the universe is true humility. Truly, too much honor means no honor. It is not wise to shine like jade and resound like stone chimes. All right. I'm going to go to Victor Mayer next. And for Victor Mayer, this is actually verse 2, because the verses show up in a different order in this book. In olden times, these attained unity. Heaven attained unity and thereby became pure. Earth attained unity and thereby became tranquil. The spirits attained unity and thereby became divine. The valley attained unity and thereby became full. Feudal lords and kings attained unity, and thereby all was put right. Yet, pushed to the extreme, it implies that if heaven were ever pure, it would be likely to rend. It implies that if earth were ever tranquil, it would be likely to quake. It implies that if spirits were ever divine, they would be likely to dissipate. It implies that if the valley were ever full, it would be likely to run dry. It implies that if feudal lords and kings were ever noble and thereby exalted, they would be likely to fall. Therefore, it is necessary to be noble and yet take humility as a basis. It is necessary to be exalted and yet take modesty as a foundation. Now, for this reason, feudal lords and kings style themselves orphaned, destitute, and hapless. Is this not because they take humility as their basis? Therefore, striving for an excess of praise, one ends up without praise. Consequently, desire not to be jingling as jade, nor solid as stone. So there's definitely a theme emerging here, even though, again, the translations are a little different. But I'm going to go ahead and read Stephen Mitchell before I start talking about it. Stephen Mitchell says, in harmony with the Tao, the sky is clear and spacious. The earth is solid and full. All creatures flourish together, content with the way they are, endlessly repeating themselves, endlessly renewed. When man interferes with the Tao, the sky becomes filthy, the earth becomes depleted, the equilibrium crumbles, creatures become extinct. The master views the parts with compassion because he understands the whole. His constant practice is humility. He doesn't glitter like a jewel, but lets himself be shaped by the Tao, as rugged and common as a stone. So it's interesting because Stephen Mitchell and Wayne Dyer really referred to the perfection of everything as long as man does not interfere with the Tao. And these were the translations that I have been with the most, so that was my understanding of the verse. But neither Derek Lynn nor Victor Mayer said the same thing. They said it a little differently. So I'm feeling to grab Derek Lynn. We'll start with Derek Lynn and we'll look at that. So what Derek Lynn and Victor Mayer seem to say, and we'll double check Victor Mayer to make sure he's saying the same thing. Again, Stephen Mitchell and Wayne Dyer really said everything is perfect as long as man doesn't mess with it. And this is a theme that we're familiar with in the Tao. That is a theme that's in the Tao, right? It's the theme of the pendulum swinging, right? When you push the pendulum, it swings back in the opposite direction. So by interfering, you're messing with and you're messing it up. It can't be in perfect harmony because you interfered with it. But I don't actually see these other two saying the same thing. And I think it's really important to contemplate what they're saying too. Because, of course, we don't know which message is most genuine. And I think it's good to look at this other angle. So what I see Derek Lynn saying is that everything is perfect, period. Not that it's perfect unless you mess with it. But everything is perfect, period. No matter what you think of it. And the reason I say that is because he says, for example, the sky attained oneness and thus clarity. And then he says, the sky lacking clarity would break apart. You know, in effect, how do you know the sky is perfect? It's there. That's how you know it's perfect. This sounds a lot like Byron Katie's teachings, right? How do you know it was supposed to happen? Because it did. He says, the earth attained oneness and thus tranquility. And then he says, the earth lacking tranquility would erupt. So how do you know that the earth is perfect? Because you can walk around on it, because it's there. The gods, which a couple of the other translations said the spirits, the gods attained oneness and thus divinity. The gods lacking divinity would vanish. The valley attained oneness and thus abundance. The valley lacking abundance would wither. The myriad things attained oneness and thus life. Myriad things lacking life would be extinct. And even the rulers of the world, which out of all of these things listed, the rulers are the ones that we might judge the most as not being in harmony with the Tao, right? The rulers attained oneness and became the standard for the world. The rulers lacking standard would be toppled. So what I hear in that is that whatever is perfect. It couldn't exist if it were not for perfection. And if this is truly accepted, this obliterates judgment. How can you judge anything? I told you all recently, I don't remember if it was during this teaching or another teaching, but I told you all recently that I have come to a way of seeing where all I see now is good. This is really the way of seeing that I hear this verse in the Tao talking about, right? Everything is perfect, no matter what you may think about it. And I'm guessing this isn't the first time you've heard this teaching. This teaching shows up through other non-dual things too. I know I used to struggle with this teaching, and maybe some of you struggle with it too. You know, you look out there and you say, how can everything be perfect? But when I was struggling with that, my inner wisdom gave me a saying to help me see that everything was perfect. And in fact, let me type this in first. Love is giving to spirit, through spirit, that which spirit requests. I talked about this a little bit last night in a different way. I contemplated this morning in my own personal journal in a different way. I talked about this last week at the retreat in a different way. None of this is new. Whatever you focus your attention on will become manifest in one way or another. Why is that perfect? Because it's a perfect reflection of your attention. And of course, when I say you here, I include the individual and I include all of consciousness. the things that are more in your personal orbit that you draw directly to you, those things maybe are more a part of the individual consciousness and its attention focus. And then the world scene is more of a collaboration of all of our attention and where we focus it. But the world can't help but be perfect. Creation can't help but be perfect. It just can't do anything else. And that's really what Derek Lynn is saying. Again, he's saying if, you know, the sky lacking clarity would break apart. You know, it couldn't exist if it was not in perfect harmony with our creative beingness. Let me hop over here and look at Victor Mayer. He says, his is a little different. It's kind of interesting. He says, heaven attained unity and thereby became pure. And then he also says, it implies that if heaven were ever pure, it would be likely to rend. Now, rend is not a word I'm familiar with. So I'm going to go ahead and look that up just to be super clear here. Tear into two. So that's the same as the sky would fall apart, right? It would tear into two. So it would rend. It would tear into two. So heaven attained unity and thereby became pure. It implies that if heaven were ever pure, it would be likely to rend. Now, that's kind of interesting. It's almost like he's double talking here, jibber jabber. If you've seen that jibber jabber commercial where those guys go in and order ice cream and you can't understand a word they're saying, this sounds a little bit like jibber jabber. Heaven attained unity, he says, and thereby became pure. And then he says, if heaven were ever pure, it would be likely to rend. I can only say how that communicates in my mind. I can't say anything else. But the way that communicates in my mind is that nothing out there has its own existence or its own qualities. What it displays is a reflection of our minds. So, heaven attained unity and thereby became pure. That would be a statement of when everything is in harmony. And everything is in harmony, of course, when we are completely focused on the Tao. Yet heaven, if heaven ever were pure, it would be likely to rend, means that heaven was not pure of its own quality. It was pure because the mind was pure. It was pure because the seer was pure. Earth attained unity and thereby became tranquil. It implies that if Earth were ever tranquil, it would be likely to quake. Again, Earth has no quality of its own. The spirits attained unity and thereby became divine. It implies that if spirits were ever divine, they would be likely to dissipate. The valley attained unity and thereby became full. It implies that if the valley were ever full, it would be likely to run dry. This seems to be saying to me that the world is not an actual objective world. Right? The world is a creation, again, of our attention, of our focus. And, you know, lately I've heard a couple people say, you know, that they're not interested in some of my other teachings, which are about going beyond perception entirely. And the reason they're not interested in those teachings is because they want to experience the real world, the happy dream. Well, this goes on to talk about how you get to that real world, at least in small dose, how you get to that real world, how you get to that happy dream. is that you become pure. You become tranquil. You become divine. You become full, which is to see yourself as abundant as you are. You attain unity. Right? If you become pure, you become tranquil, you become divine, you become full, and you attain unity, that's what the world will be to you, and that's what we call the happy dream. But those qualities do not belong to the dream. If they did, you know, the dream could lose them because they had nothing to do with you. You know, they'd have their own objective reality. What I hear is a calling for us to become pure, divine, unified, tranquil, and remain there. And it's interesting because the verse then goes on to talk about humility. And I'm guessing that's probably not an accident, because I have known teachers who started this path in a very sincere way. They were as sincere as they could be. And through their sincerity and through their spiritual practice, they gained some measure of right inner focus, therefore experience of the happy dream. And then arrogance came in. You know, the arrogance of, I'm enlightened and you're not. I know and you don't. I'm pure and you're not. My mind is quiet and yours isn't. And when that arrogance came in, they began to slip backwards. So I don't think that it's unusual that this verse would teach that in order to have the experience of the happy dream, we need to become pure, tranquil, unified. What was the other one? Abundant is just seeing everything abundant as it is, not seeking anything, right? No desires, not seeking anything. And then as we become these things, and of course our outer experience will completely change because our outer experience is a reflection of what we have become. We need to be very, very humble like Jesus was and say, this isn't me. I didn't do this. It's the Father, not I, is the way Jesus said it. If we make any claims to credit, if we want in any way for people to say, oh, look what I did. You know, I purified my mind. I, you know, whatever. We lose it. And actually what I feel to do now is just go right on to lesson 40. So I will. Oh, lesson 40 is very short. The returning is the movement of the Tao. The weak is the utilization of the Tao. The myriad things of the world are born of being. Being is born of non-being. Now, the returning movement is what people often call death. And of course, the weak The week could be anything. The week could be the lazy. The week could be the drug addicts, right? The week could be the people who are not committed and therefore cannot hold a job or a relationship. So in a way, this is saying that those things which many people might perceive as, again, failure, death, and weakness are a part of the Tao, a part of the manifestation, a part of the perfection. And then it goes on to say the myriad things of the world, and again, the myriad things are everything that you see from bad to good and good to bad, should be here and should not be here. The myriad things of the world are born of being. They're born of how being focuses its attention. But then the next sentence says that being is born of non-being. So here we go. Verse 39 showed us how to get to the real world by becoming pure ourselves, by seeing everything as perfect as it is. And now lesson 40 tells us how to go beyond the real world, beyond perception entirely. It's using the word non-being because it has to use a word. And compared to the life experience of being, the life force that is the source is non-being. Right? So it had to pick a word, so that's the word it picked. Just like compared to the consciousness of being awake when we're asleep, that is unconscious by comparison, right? Yet you all know that when you're asleep, you're not unconscious because a loud sound can wake you up. It was a different experience of consciousness, one that is different than this experience of consciousness. It was a non-perceptual experience of consciousness rather than a perceptual experience of consciousness. So we say I'm conscious when I'm awake, and we say I'm unconscious when I'm asleep, but it's not true. It's a comparison. So the non-being that is the source is still a being, just like the consciousness of deep sleep is still a consciousness. But by comparison, in order to express how it's different, the word non-being is used. Let's look at Victor Mayer. And I got to find where his is at because his is in different orders. We'll see if I can. Oh, here it is. It's verse 4. Verse 4 for him. Reversal is the movement of the way. Weakness is the usage of the way. All creatures under heaven are born from being. Being is born from non-being. Again, pointing that everything that occurs in form, birth, death, strength, weakness, good, bad, right? Everything that occurs in form, coming, going, that's a natural part of consciousness. I think I told you guys this story before that, you know, I used to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses and they talked about this perfected world that was intentionally intended by God, originally intended by God when God created the Garden of Eden. that, again, it was messed up because of Adam and Eve's sin. But that originally, you know, God's original plan has to come to fruition, you know, that God can't be wrong. And so eventually, and there's a long story about how this will happen from paradise lost to paradise gained, but eventually that perfect world would come back into being and that we would live forever on a perfect world, on a perfect earth. And I used to say, well, eventually won't the world get too full, you know, if there's no death? And I remember they said to me, well, maybe one day we won't have children anymore. And we're thinking, wow, do we want a world without any children? You know? But that question, eventually won't the world get full if there's no death? That question explains the natural cycle of death in a world of manifestation. Think of it as a world of creation. In order for additional creation to occur, previous creations have to end, right? Otherwise, it's just going to go stagnant. So all of this is a part of how consciousness operates. And all of this comes from consciousness, which is being called being here. But then it points before this to where consciousness came from, which is non-being. What's also interesting about this is if we accept that all manifestation, everything that has a beginning also has an end. If we accept that in that way being, because everyone is birthed into being, that in that way being, any being has to have an end. But then we accept also that being comes from non-being. We start to get a taste of the eternal. We start to get a taste of that which doesn't have a beginning and therefore it doesn't have to end. Let me look at Wayne Dyer. Returning is the motion of the Tao. Yielding is the way of the Tao. The 10,000 things are born of being. Being is born of non-being. I'm going to go ahead and read what Wayne Dyer has written here. With the first word returning, because it says returning is the motion of the Tao, you're being nudged toward an understanding of the basic principle of your existence. Without needing to leave your body, you're asked to die while alive. Oh, I don't know if that's completely true. You accomplish this by realizing that you're one of the 10,000 things that has appeared in the world of form. What Lao Tzu is expressing here, well, maybe this is true. What Lao Tzu is expressing here in the 40th verse is what contemporary quantum physics has confirmed many centuries later. Particles do not come from particles at the tiniest subatomic level. Instead, when the infinitesimally small specks are collided in a particle accelerator, there's nothing remaining but waves of particle-less energy. In order for you, a much bigger speck to form, you must have come from an originating spirit. The reason I started to say I didn't agree with him is when he said, without needing to leave your body, you're asked to die while alive. That may be implied by this verse, but I don't think that's directly what this verse is saying. I think what this verse is saying is in the next sentence. You accomplish this by realizing that you're one of the 10,000 things that has appeared in the world of form. In other words, what I think this verse is asking you to do is to accept that this experience of being a person in a world is a temporary experience. Right? If you don't accept that, you won't take the next step. And, you know, I have known many, many spiritual students that when they, you know, hear about things like eternal life, what their goal is not necessarily to make this body live forever, although I've actually known spiritual students who talk about that, making this body live forever. There's no reason for this body to die. But somehow there's the idea of a soul that I am, that I, the individual, am, right? The soul that gets reincarnated over and over, the soul that I am. And people want to make that eternal. And even that is not eternal. I've talked to you all before about what reincarnation really is. If you imagine let's imagine a big piece of dough, and imagine that out of that big piece of dough, I kind of create a long spaghetti noodle still connected to the dough, but you can pull it out from the dough. That long spaghetti noodle is you, as you're experiencing yourself now as a person, right? We could give it a name. And that spaghetti noodle has experiences in life. Some of them may be experiences that are repressed, and they create, I'm going to just say, dark spots on the spaghetti noodle. Some of them may be experiences of healing, and where there was a dark spot, it's erased, and now the spaghetti noodle is clear. At the end of that life, you smash that spaghetti noodle back into the ball, and the imprints are on the ball, but the spaghetti noodles has ended. And then if creation begins to form another spaghetti noodle out of the same spot, it's going to have those same imprints on them, those same dark spots that were formed through repression, for example, and those same light spots that were performed through healing. And the process of healing the entire piece of dough continues through one spaghetti noodle at a time. But there never was a person or an individual soul. It was always the whole ball of dough, which we call consciousness. Although a lot of spiritual students don't want to accept this, one of the best ways to step forward through this process of awakening is to accept that your individual life is temporary and will end. No matter what, no matter what you do with this life. And if you really begin to accept that, what happens is you begin to seek in a different way than what is eternal. You quit trying to make this eternal, this body or this soul or this conscious, this individual, what Ron calls local consciousness. You quit trying to make this eternal and you start seeking what is eternal. What am I really? You seek beyond this. And that's when you're really seeking the truth of what you are. And so that's what leads to the awakening to what you are, which is eternal. And by comparison, that is being called non-being. In my journal, because this is my strongest contemplation right now, so in my journal, what I have been calling it is stillness life, hyphenated, stillness life. In fact, why don't we go ahead and look at my journal, just for the heck of it. We'll just look at these last contemplations that are right here on the side, but I've been contemplating this for quite some time. I have not experienced the final consummation, which would be to disappear into the non-being. But I commit to contemplating the soul vision that has been gifted, which is, I don't know whether to call it an acceptance or an understanding. Maybe it's both. My acceptance, understanding of the non-being as the absolute truth. I have not experienced the final consummation, but I commit to contemplating the soul vision that has been gifted. I trust that through this contemplation, which includes abiding as stillness life and inquiring into all remaining attachments, the final consummation will be realized. This is what I want. I shall live what I want. What I live is what is given. That is the guarantee of my nature. This is the same guarantee that gets one from the ego world to the real world, right? You become pure yourself. You become tranquil yourself. You become unified yourself, and that's the world you see, right? It's the same process that takes you then beyond the world, only now your eyes are targeted on non-being, which again I call stillness life. That's the word that I use in my journal. Do I want to be an unguarded fool who blindly believes any thought sent into his mind by a script previously written? Of course not. Therefore, I must intentionally make my conscious choice ongoingly. Live as stillness life until the living of it makes it my only experience. Fast from the personality thoughts and the movement of the world while simultaneously allowing it to be as it appears. Remember, as we've seen today, it's all perfect just as it is. Do not interfere. Have no will of my own. This is true fasting. Worship the truth by contemplating soul vision ongoingly. Abide consistently as stillness life. This is true worship. One thing I have seen is that I can have anything in the world that I want. The place where I sit right now is proof. That was a desire dream, and now it is my manifest experience. I feel like the world could be my banquet table if that is what I wanted from the world. I have the power and I know it. But that is not what I want. I prefer transcendence. I prefer to go beyond, not because I expect anything from beyond. I've already been given everything I could want. I simply, humbly, want the pure, undiluted, direct experience of ultimate truth. NTI Revelation says, the world is your shepherd when you believe you are little and small. You look to it for protection when you believe that protection is what you need. But when you have left these beliefs behind as tiny wisps of air that are not noticed, you shall see the world differently. It shall not be your shepherd. It shall be your banquet table. This is the real world. And at this table, you shall feast daily, joyously with me. The world shall be transcended through your decision to let it go. For when you have finished with the feast, you shall walk happily away from the table. At that time, you shall truly know what it means to be one with me. He who has an ear, let him hear and rejoice. How shall I reach the single experience of stillness life? Contemplate awareness, stillness life throughout all experiences. As I type, notice awareness, stillness, life as I. As I look at the snow and the trees and the mountains, notice awareness, stillness, life as I. In business meetings, notice awareness, stillness, life as I. As I converse with family, notice awareness, stillness, life as I. While watching television, notice awareness, stillness, life as I. While shopping or showering, notice awareness, stillness, life as I. This contemplation can be ongoing because awareness, stillness, life as I is unending. Remember last night, I talked about whatever you contemplate, you become. How shall I reach the experience? Oh, sorry, that's the same one we just read. Let's move to the next one. When attention is engrossed with thoughts about this lifetime, I am identifying with the person personality. Let the world be. Allow it. Do not interfere. Remember, because it's perfect as it is. Everything is okay, whatever it is. Stay with the contemplation of awareness, stillness, life as I. Notice the world plays out in awareness, stillness, life, in I. The wise renounce at heart. This is the phrase that captures me. This journey cannot be taken because someone has told me to go. I cannot trudge along trying to imitate someone else's instructions. I appreciate my teachers. They are beloved for what they have offered, but this is my journey. I must follow my heart. Only my heart can lead me where my heart asks me to go. I am very fortunate. My heart asks me to go all the way, and I am willing to follow it there. This sincerity can be trusted. I feel that to some degree, I must abandon everyone. I can't be what they want me to be. They may imagine what they want from me if they wish. They can even expect it of me. But if they do, they may feel let down. I must be stillness life. Some will notice that I do not play their game. Some will not notice. Some may even think I'm playing their game better than I ever have. But what they experience, regardless of whether they see it or not, is my best attempt to be stillness life now. My best attempt at no attachments. My best attempt at no will of my own. My best attempt at let it be and do not interfere. Some may like living with stillness life. Some may not like it. Some may like it on some days and not on other days. I allow that. I let it be. I do not interfere. I ignore anything that looks like a will of my own. I release all remaining attachments. I abide as stillness life. That is what I choose. I will taste whatever this choice brings. What this choice brings is the grace that will dance me to the end of me. The fact is this, I am stillness life. That is the truth of everything. And I want to realize this as deeply as it can be realized. I seek the final consummation. Therefore, I avoid nothing. I seek nothing. I abide with attention on stillness life. I abide as stillness life. This is my heart-given assignment. This is my way. By following this way, I will certainly find where it leads. Right now, I can't tell you where it leads. I can only tell you that I am committed to walk down this path now. I feel my heart calling, and so I shall go. I willingly leave everything else behind. And there's a little more, but I'm out of time, so I will stop there. But to me, that's what today's verse is about. It's about contemplating the non-being. And the only way I knew how to talk about that was to kind of demonstrate for you how I'm doing that. So thanks. Bye.